I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome back to Radio Times. There are several ways to fight cancer. There's surgery, radiation, chemotherapy. Some people use alternative therapies. And now there's immunotherapy that uses the body's own immune system to destroy cancers. Both the use of drugs and also some extraordinary interventions have both shown great promise by either using white blood cells called T cells to fire up the immune system or by using drugs that are called immune checkpoint inhibitors. Some of this important research and treatment is taking place right here in Philadelphia, and it's our topic for today's Radio Times. Let me introduce our two guests. Lynn Schuchter is Chief of Hematology, Oncology, and Program Leader of the Melanoma Program at the Abramson Cancer Center of the University of Pennsylvania. And Lynn Schuchter, it's been a couple of years. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Also with us is David Porter. He is the Jody Fisher Horowitz Professor in Leukemia Care Excellence in the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. He's also Director of Blood and Marrow Transplantation at Penn's Abramson Cancer Center. And David Porter, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you both with us. And I just want to put some basic stuff on the table because I spent a lot of the weekend trying to educate myself about immunotherapy. And David Porter, let me begin with you. How far back do we have to go to understand where this therapy came from?
Well, we
Has
could
it
go,
been around for a while, for instance?
Well, the idea that the human immune system can help fight cancer, you have to go back more than half a century. I think physicians knew even as early as the mid-1950s, doing experiments in mice and then eventually in bone marrow transplant in people, that the human immune system was really powerful in helping to fight certain kinds of cancers. And so we knew that, but we didn't exactly know how, and we didn't know what parts of the immune system were the most important in helping fight cancer. But that notion really has been around for 60, 70 years at least.
But Lynn, I get the feeling that in the last couple of years, there have been some really interesting, exciting breakthroughs. And even last night, I heard on television, some ads on television for immunotherapy drugs.
Yeah, so the approach is really different. So a lot of understanding about how the immune system worked, but these new medicines really tackle the immune system in a different way. So we have, you know, 50 or 75 years of studies that didn't show any promise, but these new drugs work actually by taking the brakes off the immune system. We used to work hard by putting the gas on. There's sort of two ways to turn the immune system on. You can step on the gas and make a car go, or you can cut the brakes. These new treatments cut the brakes off and so made T cells super strong. And so these new medications, these checkpoint inhibitors, can more effectively stimulate the T cells to then kill a cancer cell.
And why are T cells so important, David Porter?
Well, T cells are the type of white blood cell of the immune system that is critically important to identifying abnormalities. T cells have a process where they can see things that are foreign to the body. We say that they're non-self. One of their major functions is to actually help fight viral infections. When we get viral infections, you need your T cells to become activated. In fact, when they become activated, it's one of the reasons we all feel so lousy when we have the flu or other viruses. But in addition to preventing infections and viruses, they can also recognize cells in the body that become abnormal. Mm. And cancer cells, some of them anyhow, can look abnormal to the body's immune system.
Tell us about the treatment that you've been doing.
So we have been using a treatment that tries to modify the body's own T cells to fight cancer. So as we've been talking about, we know that the human immune system can fight cancer. We know that T cells are really important. But clearly, once a person has cancer, their T cells aren't doing the job. If they were, then cancer wouldn't develop. The therapy that we've been doing is to try and take out a person's own T cells, to take them out of the body, and then to genetically modify them, to change them, so that they can now recognize a cancer cell when before it was essentially they were blind to it. And now they can see it. When they see it, they have a signal that activates the T cell. It can see the cancer cell. It binds to it. The T cells then become activated. They divide in the body. They multiply. that magnifies any potential response, and they can start killing cancer cells. We do this by taking the T cells out of the body and genetically modifying them so that they can recognize a protein on the surface of a certain kind of cancer cell, a B cell cancer, leukemia or lymphoma. And the cells are then, they're modified, they're grown in the laboratory, and then they're just infused back to the patient. And now they can kill their cancer over a short period of time, in fact, over a period of several weeks.
I was reading that you use deactivated HIV. Yes?
Sort of.
Sort of, okay.
So one of the, again, we talked about how long these ideas take to develop. This idea has been around since probably the late 1990s, but one of the limitations was how do you get new genetic material into a T cell very well? And there have been a number of people, including one of my wonderful colleagues, Carl June at the University of Pennsylvania, who developed a method to use a virus called a lentivirus, but it's essentially built on the HIV virus. To bring this new genetic material into the T cell. It makes so much sense because what the HIV virus is good at is at infecting cells, T cells, in our body. So if you can use those good parts of the virus to get it into the T cell without all the bad parts, you have a very efficient method of genetically changing cells now.
And how does this infusion work, and how does someone feel if they are being infused, if that's the right word? And I'll get to you, Lynn.
So the cells are taken out of the body. It's a procedure that takes about 4 hours. It's a little bit like undergoing dialysis. All the work happens in the laboratory over about 2 weeks. And then the patient comes in and they get an infusion of their cells over 1 day, sometimes over 3 days. The infusion itself is really quite straightforward. Patients don't really have much problem with it. However, when the cells start to work and they recognize the cancer cells, they start to divide and become activated. And when they do that, patients get quite sick. They develop what we call a cytokine release syndrome. It's a phenomenon where the T cells release all sorts of proteins into the body's bloodstream that make you feel essentially like you have just an absolutely awful flu, although I will say it can at times be much more severe than the flu. But
Life-threatening?
It can be life-threatening. It generally starts with fevers that can escalate and go quite high, but it can evolve over time to cause very low blood pressure, trouble breathing. I will say that part of the research that we've been doing is to identify why that happens, and we think we have a good intervention that in the vast majority of people can stop that reaction and make patients feel much better during it.
Lynn, turning to you, and it's interesting because you deal with melanoma. So are skin cancers something that are amenable to this immunotherapy?
Yeah, so melanoma and other types of cancer have on their surface things that can be mutated or broken, and the immune system can recognize these cancer cells. So it's been an approach in melanoma for a long time. But as I was saying earlier, this new approach more effectively stimulates these T cells. So we've long known that melanoma can be treated with immunotherapy. But also what's exciting is that cancers that have been thought to be not sensitive to immunotherapy, lung cancer, bladder cancer, renal cancer, these same cancers are now being successfully treated with these new therapies. The therapy that David was talking about, the CAR T-cell therapy, in that example, you are trying to take a T-cell, modify it to recognize something very specific on the cancer cell. With these new PD-1 antibodies, we don't know exactly what the target is on the cancer cell, and so we're in a more nonspecific way stimulating the T-cells, but in a more profound way that is stimulating the right kind of T-cell and making it super strong. So that's what's been so remarkable is that these PD-1 antibodies are affected against such a broad range of cancer cells and where we don't have to know the exact target.
And what are the side effects for some of these medications?
So these therapies stimulate the T-cells. So those stimulated T-cells don't just attack cancer cells. They attack normal cells in the body. We call these immune side effects or autoimmune complications. So it can attack the intestine, so patients can have diarrhea, can affect the skin, and there can be a rash, can affect endocrine organs. This is sort of unique. It can affect the thyroid, cause the thyroid gland to be underactive, the pituitary. So there are unique side effects that we have to instruct patients on. We have to actually teach physicians this whole new side effect type of side effects that can occur with these new treatments.
And are we talking about treatments that are sort of last resort treatments that you have, at least today, you've got patients that have tried X, Y, and Z, and now you're saying, well, you know, let's try these medications or let's try this procedure?
Well, these new PD-1 antibodies are being used for newly diagnosed metastatic cancer. So if I have a patient with melanoma whose melanoma has spread to distant organs, lung, or liver, this may be the very first treatment that I use. And what's been remarkable is that there have been what we call complete responses, where all the cancer goes away. Wow. And sometimes this is very durable. And in my own field of melanoma, we're beginning to say, can we possibly cure patients with advanced cancer with these new approaches to treatment?
Should we think cure, Dave? Are we ready to say something like that?
I will say we should always think cure. There's absolutely no doubt that that is the goal. Are we there yet or not? I don't think we know. I think the T-cell therapy is a little bit different, and it's a little bit earlier in its stage of development. We are still treating patients with far advanced and heavily pretreated cancers. They've been through a lot of different therapies and are running out of options. That is the nature of cancer research. When you start new therapies and you don't understand when it may work and where it may work, what all the side effects are going to be, we generally start with people who have limited choices. And so we're not at the point where we're using them as initial therapy. We don't know if they're curative. We are very confident that we have patients who have absolutely no signs of cancer when nothing else has worked, and we have several patients who have been in remission for several years now with no signs of cancer on no other therapies. Are they cured yet or not? We don't know, but I think we're all optimistic that whether it be cellular therapy or antibody therapy, by either using the immune system or adding these immune stimulators to other therapies, we have the potential to cure things we could never think about curing in the past.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation talking about immunotherapy in this hour of Radio Times. It is clearly revolutionizing cancer treatment. Talking with David Porter. He's professor in leukemia care excellence in the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. He's also director of blood and marrow transplantation at Penn's Abramson Cancer Center. Also with this, Lynn Schuchter, Chief of Hematology Oncology and Program Leader of the Melanoma Program, also at the Abramson Cancer Center of the University of Pennsylvania. Clearly, lots of things going on here in Philadelphia. Taking a very short break, we'll get back to our conversation, opening up the lines at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. And again, we're talking about immunotherapy and cancer treatment. Our guests are David Porter and Lynn Schuchter here in here in Philadelphia at the University of Pennsylvania. And again, any questions, comments to join our conversation, 1-888-477-9499. Do we know at this point, David, perhaps I'll put this to you, whether this is all cancers respond to this kind of immunotherapy? Are there specific kinds of cancers that seem to respond?
No, that's a great question. We don't know. We do know that there are cancers right now that are much more likely to respond to this immune therapy. Some of the work we've been talking about with T-cell therapy is to target specific proteins on the surface of the cancer cells. The work that we've started with is to target certain kinds of B-cell cancers like acute lymphoblastic leukemia, CLL, chronic lymphocytic leukemia, lymphoma. And we've done this because they have a unique protein on the surface of their cells that really is not on other parts of the body. One of the huge challenges with this is to identify on the cancer cell what is unique to the cancer but not on normal parts of the body. So for right now, for the cellular therapies, it is most effective for these kind of leukemias where you have something unique about them. It's going to be much harder to apply this to other therapies, but there's so much work being done to try and use this for other kinds of tumors. And I think the same may be true with some of the antibodies.
Yeah, go ahead, Lynn.
Yeah, and it's probably important to mention that immunotherapy, there's lots of different types of immunotherapy. And so David just mentioned cellular therapy, where you're delivering to the patient the activated cells. And then there are medicines that can trigger the immune response and then indirectly cause the cancer cells to grow. And then, you know, still a big question about whether cancer vaccines will work. And so that's another type of immunotherapy. Traditionally, cancer vaccine therapy hasn't worked. But now, again, with this new knowledge of how the immune system works, we think that the cancer vaccine field is going to be resurrected. We now know that if certain cancers have a lot of mutations, have a lot of abnormal genes, those are the cancers that are likely going to be the ones to respond to these immunotherapies. Okay. So now there's new, the cancer vaccines of the past didn't have the right triggers. So now it's, I would say, a new age to look at, well, maybe if we modify the cancer cells in a different way, vaccinate patients, we could get a more effective immune response.
Maybe another way of asking the same question to you, David, as you said, you have a couple of patients that have been in, what, remission for the last couple of years. Is there something, and I have to say I know one of those people, is there something unique about them that would help us understand what's going on here?
We don't know. The question really gets at why does this work in one person and not another? And we don't know the answer to that yet. I can tell you there's so much work being done trying to identify either specific patient factors or maybe factors that have to do with either the cancer itself or the person's immune system that allows this to work in one person and not another. It's trying to identify what we call biomarkers, some marker in the patient or in their T cells that say this is why it's going to work in one patient and not another. It's important because if you can select only the patients most likely to benefit, of course, then you're only treating the patients where this may work and you're not subjecting patients where it's probably not going to work to some of these therapies. But it's also important because once you figure out why this doesn't work, then you can start changing that, and then you can start developing therapies to overcome those obstacles, and we're working on
that. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you say that because both of you said, we don't know. We don't know. I mean, we're looking into this stuff, but we don't know. But I guess, Lynn, that's part of the research process.
That's exactly right. And we do rely on patients to enroll on clinical trials and very courageous to enroll in a study, and then we also sample their blood and their tumor to best understand how are these therapies working. And it is an iterative process. We give a therapy, we understand the side effects, we learn from that patient, and then how do we do better? You know, some of the new approaches now are combining different immunotherapies together. So if we know that one drug will stimulate the immune system in one way, and we can add a second medication to further get that right immune response. Mm. But the research is really critical, and I think David's point about we really want to know which patients we should be treating and when, because as we've talked about, there are side effects associated with the treatment, and we want to give the right treatment to the right patient. So this concept of developing the biomarkers to find out which patient. The other thing that's really interesting is how the cancer cells work to evade the immune system. So, you know, we do have our immune system in place. The cancer cells are growing, and they literally, the cancer cells learn how to shield themselves from the immune system so the T cells don't see the cancer cells. And we see now with some of these new therapies, the treatments work. Then they may stop working, and we know that patients become resistant. And what we're learning is, again, how sneaky the cancer cells operate and new ways to hide themselves from the immune system. And so then that's why layering these therapies to interfere with the resistance is so essential.
Sort of like antibiotic resistance? I mean, is it a similar mechanism?
Exactly right. And so deep work into understanding precisely what's happening, exactly like antibiotics and resistance.
I mean, David, it seems like a game of cat and mouse.
It's a very good analogy. And, you know, what Lynn is saying, I love that term, sneaky, because these cells are sneaky, and they seem so smart on some level.
Because they're elusive. I mean, all the ways that we think of sneaky.
They're elusive, and they can change. In some obvious ways and in some not so obvious ways, we are targeting a protein on the cancer cells called CD19. That's what the T cells now can recognize, and that's what allows them to kill the cancer cell. Well, if you were a cancer cell, what would you do? You'd lose CD19. And in fact, we are finding now that this therapy works dramatically in some people. And in a small number, the leukemia comes back. And when it comes back, it has lost its expression of CD19. It's no longer on the surface. Ah. And so they've very quickly found a way to evade that one mechanism.
And what is the success rate? I mean, I don't know if it's too soon to say what the success rate is, but looking at some of the research you've done, how many people seem to have done well on this?
Yeah, it's different according to the different diseases that we've treated. We've seen really some remarkable responses in diseases like CLL and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, where 40 to 50% of patients who are responding to no other therapies now have these really rather remarkable responses. The most dramatic outcomes have been in pediatric ALL, acute lymphocytic leukemia. Once a patient relapses or they become refractory to chemotherapy, their prognosis is dismal. Their treatment options are extremely limited. This therapy has resulted in complete remissions in up to 90% of those people. Of children. There's been no precedent for response rates like this in pediatric ALL.
And is that because children have really active immune systems?
It is. Don't know if it's more if children are more responsive than adults. We see response rates of 70 to 90% in adults as well. Yeah. There have been more children treated. But even in adults with ALL and children with ALL, responses of up to 90% have never been seen with any other therapy.
You're nodding your head, Lynn.
Well, we're seeing really high response rates, not quite that level of what's seen in pediatric leukemia, but in melanoma, which has been a type of cancer that's been pretty refractory to treatment, 30% of patients can have a response to the treatment. And when patients have a response, sometimes it's a complete response. And similarly in lung cancer and other types of cancer. When we add the two medications together, for example, these are complicated names, but ipilimumab or nivolumab, when we put those two together, the response rate can be as high as 75%.
Wow.
So that's what's learning how to combine these. Now, of course, when we combine these medications, we can see greater toxicity. So we see more of the autoimmune side effects. So we have to be very careful about which patients and monitoring those side effects.
And is that, will you take these drugs for life? Is that the idea? Or until the cells are eradicated?
Well, we don't know. It's such an important question. So if patients have a complete response, we eventually stop it. But for patients who continue to respond, we've been giving this therapy. Now, it's relatively new, so we were enrolling patients on the clinical trials. So some patients have been on for 3 or 4 years. The treatment that I'm talking about with the PD-1 antibodies is given intravenously. It's given as an outpatient, and it's given every 3 weeks.
Hmm.
And so patients, you know, it's not the traditional side effects of chemotherapy. There's no hair loss. There's no nausea or vomiting. Most patients actually have very few side effects with the treatment. We monitor them, but many patients are, you would never know they were going through active cancer treatment.
Because I was reading about things like skin conditions or, as you mentioned before, diarrhea. You're not finding that?
We see it, but it's very manageable. With either dose modification or using medicines like steroids, we can control those side effects.
And that's Lynn Schechter, Chief of Hematology Oncology Program Leader of the Melanoma Program at the Abramson Cancer Center of the University of Pennsylvania. Also with us, David Porter, Professor in Leukemia Care Excellence in the Perelman School of Medicine, also at the University of Pennsylvania. He's Director of Blood and Marrow Transplantation at the Abramson Cancer Center as well. And you can join our conversation. I see a lot of callers want to call us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And just so you know, our guests cannot diagnose whatever conditions you might be experiencing, but certainly can share some of the research that they have been doing as well. I always have to say that. Let me get Dan from, looks like Winmore, to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Dan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm particularly interested in checkpoint inhibitors since they seem to be more of a one-size-fits-all. I mean, not for every disease, but it's not a one-off thing like making CAR T cells for wide applicability. And also, I wonder whether they have applicability beyond cancer, such as for upregulating checkpoints for autoimmunity or transplant, or whether downregulating them for infectious disease would work. But what I'd like to focus on is, I think sometimes this stuff is being oversold, especially on TV when they're advertising it, and what the percent of responders is. I'm just wondering if, since you're depending on the immune system to respond to the tumor, traditional chemotherapy beats up the immune system pretty badly. What about using these things first line
before
you get beat up?
Sure. Dan, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Lynn, I'm going to toss that first to you.
Sure. Good questions. So we are using this therapy now first line, and I think your point is important because if we wait until the cancer is too advanced, which does weaken the immune system, or patients experience the effects of chemotherapy, their immune system can be weakened. So these therapies are now being moved into frontline, first-line therapy for certain cancers. We're using it frontline in lung cancer and immunotherapy in kidney cancer. And what's really interesting now is because they're generally well-tolerated, we're moving them into even earlier stages of disease. So prior to knowing that a cancer has metastasized, we call that adjuvant therapy. So after somebody's had surgery, we know they're at high risk for a recurrence of their cancer. Now we're beginning to take these therapies into earlier stages of disease. The medicine ipilimumab was just approved by the FDA about 2 weeks ago for high-risk patients with melanoma. So your point is really important. We want to say move these therapies up much earlier in the course of things and not have this be a treatment of last resort. Absolutely.
I mean, David, is this the opposite of chemotherapy? I mean, is it – I don't know enough to know about how those both work, immunotherapy and chemotherapy, but in terms of their impact on the immune system.
I think the points are good, that chemotherapy – does weaken the immune system in many different ways, and particularly some of the diseases that we're treating with T cells and some of the diseases I treat, the chemotherapy specifically kills T cells. And there are patients who have undergone too much treatment that we can't collect their T cells or their immune systems are too weak, and that, in fact, may be one of the reasons why this works in some people and not others, having to do with the function of their immune system, perhaps related to their prior therapy. So it is something we're very aware of and thinking about how to do things just like Dan suggests, moving this early on before patients have been exposed to too much other treatment.
And even thinking beyond cancer.
Beyond cancer.
Right. Let me just also mention that we are actually using these medicines with chemotherapy. And so the idea is that some cancers are sensitive to chemotherapy. We give the chemotherapy, cancer cells can be destroyed. They release what we call antigen. Then you give this immune booster. And so we might actually be able to use chemo with the immune checkpoint inhibitors to get a better response. Mm-hmm. So in lung cancer, for example, we give both the standard chemotherapy and the immune boosters. We're doing this concept with something we call RadVax, where we combine radiation and these immunotherapies. We target a lesion and radiate it with cancer. We destroy a certain lesion, release antigen, and then come in with the immune system to rev up that immune response and try to steer this revved up immune response to the cancer.
Well, and you've used, I mean, it's such a great metaphor, this notion of the accelerator and the brake. But is that what it is? It's a matter of sort of as we drive, you sometimes you put on the brakes, sometimes you use the accelerator. Is that sort of how we should be thinking about this?
That's exactly right. So the immune system, I mean, there can be too much of a good thing.
Right.
So when we our immune system does, if we are exposed to a bacteria or virus, it responds to eliminate that virus or bacteria. But then you need these signals to stop the immune system. Otherwise, we would constantly be in a situation with autoimmune disease. So that's right. We have to have these counter both the accelerator and the brake.
You like that metaphor? I mean, is that how you think, David Porter?
Well, the work that that we've been talking about with the cells refers to new genetic material is a new protein we call a chimeric antigen receptor. And the jargon we use for that is a CAR. So we call these CAR T cells. And so the CAR analogies are all over the place with these. So I can't resist. I do like that analogy.
It's helpful, don't you think?
But this field is moving so rapidly. It is just astounding where this is leading to. And so what we are talking about mostly today is ways to turn on the immune system, to manipulate it and increase its activity. One of those ways is by cutting the brakes, but what is coming down the road are new ways to do exactly what you're talking about, and that is to somehow titrate the reaction, to be able to turn it on when you want it on and to turn it off when it's perhaps a little bit too potent. And I think that as these therapies become in more use and become more effective, that will be the next phase.
Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's David Porter, who joins us along with Lynn Schuchter. We are talking about immunotherapy. Frankly, some of the research that's taking place here in Philadelphia. And a lot of people that want to join the conversation, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This hour of Radio Times, we're talking about some interesting breakthroughs. I think we can use that word in cancer treatment and care. And again, talking with David Porter and Lynn Schuchter. Let me get, looks like Betsy from Elverson to join us on Radio Times. Betsy, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi there. Go ahead, Betsy.
Hi.
Hi there.
My husband just passed away in October.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you. From bladder cancer. He had a plasmacytoid variant, and which is very unusual. If your people there are familiar with that, it's extremely unusual. But we were at Fox Chase, and we were given an option to try immunotherapy, which we did take. And he had two rounds of it in the summer. The symptoms that you're talking about, the side effects, were definitely present, but mm-hmm. we didn't really have any other hope to treat it at all, so we decided to go with it. And I was so pleased that we were given the opportunity to try it, and hopefully in the clinical trial, some of the information that he was able to give because of his case will be beneficial to other patients, I hope, in the future.
Well, Betsy, it's a wonderful call, and we're so sorry to hear about your husband, but clearly he seemed, Lynn, to be doing something for other people in similar situations.
Exactly. Betsy, I'm so sorry about your husband, and as I was saying earlier, it really is courageous to enroll on a clinical trial, and we really thank you and your husband for participating in a study. We do learn a lot when the treatment doesn't work, and so we do hope that the investigators at Fox Chase will be able to understand, well, why didn't it work this time?
Right.
Let's understand that so that patients in the future will benefit from the therapy. So we do learn from this, not the outcome that we want, of course, but we absolutely can learn from what he did for everybody.
David, anything you want to add to that?
No, I also really am quite sorry, but it is the patients are indeed the unsung heroes in all this. It's hard to imagine what that situation is like, and Lynn and I have seen this for many years. To enter into a clinical trial of largely the great unknown. You don't know what the side effects are going to be. You don't know what the responses are going to be like. We don't learn anything without patients participating in these trials. And we and everybody I work with, our entire team, are so grateful to these people willing to subject themselves sometimes to research that doesn't always work.
I mean, it's a public service to all of us.
Absolutely.
Betsy, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me get Martha from Mount Airy to join us. Hi, Martha. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. My sister was diagnosed with metastatic melanoma in May of 2014. And when she was first, and I should say she's been in treatment at MD Anderson since then, and she does is on a PD-1 immunotherapy treatment and has responded very well. But what my question is this, when she was first diagnosed, the surgeon or the oncologist who diagnosed her was not with that hospital, was with a different hospital, and said, you have 3 months to live, and if anyone tells you differently, they're just trying to get your money.
Oh,
and my question is really about inconsistency. I don't know if it's of knowledge or of treatment options in various hospitals and practices, and if your guests can anything about that.
No, Martha, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me toss it back to you, Lynn, because you mentioned melanoma.
Well,
David as well.
And it's wonderful how well your sister is doing and responding to these new therapies. You know, this is all new, these approaches. And, you know, in the last 3 to 4 years, today we're talking about immunotherapy, but at the same time, there's been this explosion in this other therapy called targeted therapy, where we understand the genes that are broken in a cancer and applying the new therapies. So it is a part of all of our jobs to raise awareness about these new treatments. I mean, most physicians are familiar now with these new approaches to treatment. But it is important for patients to say, well, to seek a second opinion or to ask, are there any other options? Is there a clinical trial available for me? Many times people think about a clinical trial means they're a guinea pig, they may not get active treatment. But for patients with cancer, they're getting an active treatment.
Oh,
they're getting
right?
a treatment. It depends upon the site, but for advanced cancer, they're absolutely getting the treatment. So, you know, shows like this and other things raise awareness of these new treatments because they are more and more available, not just in specialized centers. They're available in the community setting, really, for all oncologists to be. Oncologist is a cancer doctor that gives these therapies.
David, is it ever appropriate for a doctor or to say to somebody, you have 3 months to live? Can you say that even?
It is appropriate at times to have a conversation with a patient and tell them there really are no treatment options and that their lifespan is very measured. I certainly can tell you whenever I've had to guess at that duration and try and put a time down, you're always wrong. So I certainly don't talk in those terms. But it is appropriate to tell a patient when there are no more options. It is also true that historically, the majority of clinical trials are not necessarily effective. There are people who are pessimistic about clinical trials, but I think one of the things we've talked about this morning and that you've heard is how much we learn when they work, and sometimes, unfortunately, when they don't work. There are times when patients aren't appropriate for a clinical trial. I think it's important for a physician to know when that may or may not be the right option. Nevertheless, there will always be inconsistency in knowledge with some people, some physicians who are perhaps more pessimistic than others. Mm. Part of our job is to educate people, to educate not just patients and the public, but the physician community about different options. I think that we need to be able to do that and explain when this may or may not be appropriate.
Another question, and I'll get back to our callers. Does, though, immunotherapy help us understand what cancer is? I mean, this I don't know if it's an elusive disease, but certainly it's a disease that we haven't found a cure yet. Does immunotherapy, and I'm looking at you, David, does it get us closer to that?
Yes, it does. For instance, we used to think, and I probably learned many years ago, that cancer happens when a cell goes haywire and grows out of control. One of the things that we've learned about cancer and from immunotherapy is that cancer is now defined not just by growing out of control, but by not dying. And that sounds a little bit subtle, but in fact, it's very important that one of the definitions now of cancer is to evade all the mechanisms of death, not just to keep growing and growing. And so I think we are learning more about what makes a cancer cell cancer.
Let me get, it looks like Alice from Graduate Hospital to join us on Radio Times. Alice, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm actually a patient of Dr. Schuchter's for 10 years now. I've been in remission for 10 years, and I was one of the, I guess, earlier participants in some of the immunotherapy that was going on. The treatment they have now is not the treatment I got back then, but I am living proof that this stuff works. I have stage 3 melanoma and had a biochemotherapy, which is the type of immunotherapy, followed up with a vaccine trial. All thanks to Dr. Schuchter.
Well, she's right across from us, modestly smiling here. Lynn, anything you want to say?
Well, and then, you know, and Alice just had a baby about a year and a half ago.
I did. Yeah, Marcus will be, 9 months.
So, I mean, really amazing. Now, the therapy that she received was really tough therapy. She was in the hospital for it, really sick with the treatment. And then she also enrolled on a clinical trial that was designed to trigger an immune response. And she's doing incredibly well, no signs of her melanoma at all. And she is, again, one of these really courageous people who took that big leap and went on a clinical trial.
Alice, I appreciate the call into Radio Times, and congratulations on your success and a little child as well. Our first caller raises, David, about, and I don't want to be in the position of overselling this. I mean, clearly I hear the caveats and I hear the caution that both of you have. I mean, a call like Alice, of course, gets us all excited. How should we... What's the right sort of balance, I guess, of enthusiasm and caution? Maybe like the brake and the accelerator.
Yeah. Well said. Cautious optimism. There are situations where we use, you know, very dramatic explanations. This is very new in development, and I think that's why we are trying to be cautious with our explanation about this. This is new therapy. It's only been around for a while. We don't yet understand all the places it may work, where it doesn't work. We're very much aware of that. There is a great deal of excitement about this kind of therapy for all sorts of reasons, many of which are very obvious, using the human immune system to fight cancer. But we are cautious, and it's one of the reasons we keep talking about clinical trials, that when this is new therapy, you have to learn about this in a very meticulous manner to really understand what you're doing with it before it's widely disseminated.
And you need humans.
People.
We have an email from Ron who said, is there any success with this type of therapy with prostate cancer? Lynn?
Sure. So, hi, Ron. One of the first immunotherapies approved for cancer was actually for prostate cancer. And that was also a form of T-cell therapy or cell-based therapy to deliver to patients. So there's a lot of work going on in prostate cancer, and some of these new medicines that we've talked about today are also being studied in prostate cancer. Yeah. So what you're going to see is that, I think everyone's understood that cancer is not one disease, that even if we take an individual disease, it's very lung cancer, for example, that's really multiple different diseases. And so what's going on is testing each of these new approaches in these different types of cancer. Sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. We would like to get to the point where we could predict which cancers are more likely going to respond to these treatments. And what's been really interesting is to say The cancers that have the highest number of these broken genes or mutations are the ones that seem to be responding to the treatment. So it's really interesting. So I would say stay tuned for prostate cancer and some breast cancer as well. We're starting to think about these treatments in that type of cancer as well.
Let me see what TC has to say. TC calling us from Trenton. Go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My mom has, I believe it's called T-cell lymphoma, and she's been struggling with this for, she's been diagnosed since she was 12, but it's really kind of come to a head recently. What I want to know is she's been in and out of the hospital in different treatment centers, and right now she's on chemotherapy, but she hasn't taken the immunotherapy or even any type of clinical trials. I want to know, one, are clinical trials still available for these cancers? And two, is there like a special type of insurance you have to qualify? Do you qualify if you have, say, Medicaid or Medicare?
TC, good question. Thanks for calling in. David, let me toss that first to you.
Yeah. TC, I'm sorry to hear about your mom.
Yep.
Sounds like she's been fighting this for a long time. There are many, many clinical trials. Most clinical trials have very specific criteria about when they may or may not be appropriate. And that's something that I absolutely encourage everybody to bring up with your physician. And just to put a plug in, there is actually a government website called clinicaltrials.gov. And you can go on there and you can plug in the disease you're interested in. You can type in T-cell lymphoma, and you can find a listing of all registered clinical trials, and that may be a first place to start. Mm. So the answer is often there are clinical trials. It may depend on what's happening with her now, what her prior treatments may or may not have been. But I would think it's something to look into. T-cell lymphomas are particularly difficult to think about for immunotherapy. If you think about some of the things that we're talking about, we are talking about therapies that activate T cells. We're trying to use the T cells to kill the cancer. And so you have to be careful with a T cell malignancy. You don't want to activate the cancer cell per se as well. But I would look into it.
And we're almost out of time here, but TC raised an all-important question, Lynn, about insurance.
Right.
You know, insurance.
So it is the routine care cost associated with clinical trials are covered by insurance. Often a clinical trial provides coverage for the medication, and absolutely patients who have Medicare or Medicaid would be eligible for a clinical trial. So I would agree, TC, with what David said, is to see if there is an option for your mom and see if perhaps a clinical trial is available. The Affordable Care Act really requires that the routine care costs be covered by Medicare and by insurance.
TC, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Lynn Schuchter, David Porter, thank you very much for joining us today on the show. It's been a really interesting discussion.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Lynn Schuchter, Chief of Hematology Oncology, Program Leader of the Melanoma Program. That's at the Abramson Cancer Center of the University of Pennsylvania. David Porter, Professor of Leukemia Care Excellence in the Perelman School of Medicine, also at Penn, and also Director of Blood and Marrow Transplantation at Abramson Cancer Center. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about the program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of the show. It's produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. And our intern, Diana Allen. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us.